Yeah. Good morning also from me. So I'm Hans-Holger Rutz and Jens Gulden. I will be giving the talk, and but for the questions also Jens Gulden will be happy to answer. He's sitting in front of me. So the title is already on the screen. We're going to discuss a model for a text-based model for representing time. We will soon see what kind of time we mean for different time-based media such as sound files, but it can be generalized to include other media as well. So we want to distinguish between positions and parts of time. And for this presentation, I will be dealing exclusively with sound files, so one-dimensional time-based media. Why do we think that such a format would be a necessity? The first thing sounds trivial, it's that when we deal with music, for example, the organization of time is the most fundamental thing we'll be dealing with. And this is particularly true when we deal with computer music and especially with electroacoustic music, where we deal with concrete sound. We have recorded sounds, and the most fundamental operations we usually do is we cut them and we rearrange them. So we can think of portions of sounds, we can think of sounds or gestures of inside sounds of kind of containers, so we can define them to have a starting and a starting position and a length position. Shall we turn down the volume a little? It's almost feedbacking. Can I do this? It's okay? It's still audible? And we think that the present systems that exist so far are lacking certain features or are not compatible with other systems, particularly open systems or open source systems. Everybody knows there's a vast majority of media formats, and they all kind of have descriptions of marker positions or time positions, but they're all in some way limited. And also we think it will be useful to decouple the time description from the actual media files. We may want to process them separately, so we would like to keep them in different files. When designing such a format, we want to attain three goals, very simple goals that you usually want to attain in any project. In this case, we want this format that we are going to describe to be easily generated, and also it should be easy to parse it so as to make it available to a lot of systems without having too much effort to use them. And which is like the essence of looking at the existing formats, we need to ensure that the format can be extended later and be equipped, for example, with additional information depending on the project we want to use the data with. So there's an obvious choice is to use the XML format, the extensible markup language format, which is a text-based format, and therefore allows us to read the text without any additional front end. We can directly read the text files, we can easily store them, we can easily generate them by hand also if we like, using a normal text editor, but also there are a lot of implementations for all different systems. We're going to look at one in particular, that is a XML library for SuperCollider 3 that Jens Gulden wrote. So SuperCollider 3 is our prototyping environment for demonstrating the system. And there are SuperCollider 3, for those who don't know, is a real-time programming environment that is specialized in sound synthesis, but can be used also for general programming things, and can also be used for displaying slides, for example. So I'm already here in SuperCollider. And SuperCollider is also available for Linux, so everything that we're going to see today, although I'm using it now on Mac, so of course it also works on Linux. So I already briefly said why we want to easy to generate design goal. We want to be able to write the text, and we want to maybe be able to access it from many languages. So in all standard programming languages, we have APIs for XML, and now we have a SuperCollider library for XML. We also, if we think that we might want to generate text files by hand, we may want to have different opportunities of expressing times. For example, we might want to express it as a very human readable format, or we can use, for example, minutes and seconds, and we can use just plain seconds, we can use milliseconds, we can count in sample frames, we can use relative positions, like go to the middle of the sound file, go to 50% of the whole length of the sound file. And when we're dealing with measure-based music, we might want to express things in beats, which is like just a different time base, but it's a linear scale like all the other scales. And on the other hand, we want it to be easily readable. The XML format essentially allows us to add extra information because it's a tag-based format and the parsers can skip tags and attributes that we don't need to process. So it's easy to extend the format without breaking existing systems. And also, it is a good choice for transforming data. We might have already data in some text-based format. We can read the text format and we can transform it into some other format, which is very easy in XML. So a model has been developed that describes our approach. And I don't have internet access at the moment, but you will have the slides online anyway, so you can look at this page. This is the wiki page for SuperCollider, and there's it's a subpage describing the model and having a downloadable archive of the library itself for SuperCollider and examples demonstrating the model. We think it is necessary to introduce a few terms so we know we talk about the same thing. We want to introduce some of the fundamental terms that can be reused so everybody knows what we're talking about when we're talking for example about positions. So we decided to call the positions. Position is a very general term. We use a more metaphoric word maybe. The anchor is a position that sticks somewhere. It's like a locking position, it's like a fixed position. So we have anchors that define a certain point in the time, and we have regions of time or spans of time or parts of time that we call slices. And naturally we can make a slice by taking two anchors, one for the beginning of the slice and one for the ending of the slice, and therefore we define a region. And as I already said, the values that we use to describe an anchor can be expressed in different ways. We can express them in as a second value, as a millisecond value, or as a sample frame-based value, or as a relative value. And it is essential that we use a container concept for time. That means that we can nest slices in a hierarchical way. For example, we have a whole sound file, which we call the master slice, and then we can take a subsection of that and we call it a child slice of the master slice. And for example, we say that the child slice goes from 25% to 50% of the master slice, and we can go down. So we can build up a container hierarchy. Another idea, which is like can be seen as an extension of this basic thought, is that we want to refer to the slices later on for playing them back or for processing them. And we want to decouple this idea from the monolithic idea of a fixed slice. So we want to be able, for example, to use one slice a couple of times. So we thought it would be a good idea to introduce two new terms, which is the queue list and the queue. The queue list is just a collection of queues, and the queues, one queue refers to one particular slice. But each queue can, for example, be used with a unique identifier, and therefore we can have four queues with four identifiers referring to the same slice. That's why we make a distinction between queues and slices. I'm not sure if the graphic is big enough to be viewed on the Beamer. This is a small overview of the terms used. So we have a slightly different naming here, but we have the anchors. The anchors are essentially have a field which is the time. The time is a variable described by a time value. We have the slices which have a start and an end anchor. And when we deal with sound files, we always consider the waveform, the whole sound file, as one implicit big master slice that goes from the beginning to the ending of the sound file, so we can refer to it by building subslices. And then we can have separately a queue list and queues that refer to these slices. So we have a master waveform, and we can use subregions, and they can be described in different ways, which we will see in a second. So I want to show you one example of applying this model to a concrete XML file. This is like as we said, the paper is a proposal, so it's still in progress to define exactly how we might name things, but this is a suggestion from our side. And we can, the XML format is also a hierarchical format, so we nest elements inside elements. Elements are these element names inside these kind of braces, I don't know.
Less than greater than
everybody knows them probably. So we have to have a root element, which is the base element in which every other element appears. And this element we shall call the instrument, but one could imagine any other name anyway. And I'm going to just down to the example. So we have one block, the instrument, and every block has to be closed at the end. If we don't, we usually don't do this by hand, but we have libraries that deal with the proper balancing of all the elements. Then we say we have inside this instrument we have one sound file. We call this element the wave, and we can specify the place on the hard disk that this is necessary if the XML file is separate, since the file is separate from the sound file itself. And then this is comments in XML, so this is the first actual slice that we define. To refer to slices later, for example, to build a queue list, we need to name the slice. And then we can define the time positions of the slice. So the first example uses a very brief way of expressing a slice. We just say the slice goes to 20.55839 seconds. This is a shortcut version of an expression that can be written more verbally, so as we shall see further down. So it implies that we refer to the wave as the whole parent region, the whole parent slice, the master slice. We imply that we begin at the beginning of the slice starts at the beginning of the file, and we imply that the parsing application somehow knows how to translate a time value in seconds to some reasonable other value, maybe, for example, a frame index, which is then calculated from the sample rate of the sound file. We have other shortcuts. For example, we have a shortcut element called pad, which we can use to skip along in the current child slice, in this case, in the master slice. So the next slice, if we omit in the next slice the beginning of the slice, it will be obvious from the previous statements. That is, it must, the beginning is 20.5 seconds plus 27.7 seconds. We can explicitly give the beginning position of a slice, and without any unit, the meaning is that this is a relative position, that is a percentage position from between 0 and 1. And finally, it's an example of the full syntax. So we have nested elements inside the slice element. We define a start element and an anchor at a certain time, which is already, again, a shortcut. And here's the really the longest possible version, is the ending of the slice. We have a block element anchor, and we have a time element, and we have the actual value of the time. This is the hash symbol is used for sample frames. And then after the wave element, we have the opportunity to define a QList. It needn't be necessarily in the same XML file, of course. We can name the list, and we can then assemble references to slices. So that's why we need to name the slices. So this is like the proposal for the format, and now we should look at. Now I'm making a slight excursion to another application that naturally deals with times and waveforms, which is a sound editor. We shall see how it deals with the time, and finally we shall see how we can get that existing thing together with a new proposed form. So this is also a cross-platform application called Eisenhout, which is a sound file editor written in Java, and it uses also SuperCollider for the sound synthesis. So naturally, we will see that SuperCollider is kind of the bridging element between the two things. And it has a very basic concept about markers. In the current version, it has only simple time positions that can be thought of the anchors in our model. It doesn't have slices yet. It doesn't have regions or things that have a length, a duration. And I shall show you how we can edit the markers in the sound file editor. So I have the editor here, and I just open an arbitrary sound file. I have a classical time view on the horizontal axis, and I can add marking positions, and I can move them around. But I might want to have programmatic control over them, so that's why the two things meet. I have a similar concept here with the marker times being able to be expressed in different ways. I have a rather long format, which is the one that you usually want to have as a human readable format. It's the hours, minutes, seconds, and milliseconds format, but I can translate also to samples or milliseconds, or in fact a percentage which doesn't go between 0 and 1, but between 0 and 100. So I can edit the name, and the marker has a name. So it's very similar to what we've seen with the anchors actually on the slices also. So I can move the marker around. I can say it should go to the beginning of the sound file. No, it doesn't work. Why not? Confirm it. I have some programmatic control. I mean, I have some fine control by giving the values directly, but we will want to have algorithmic control to generate and read the markers. So this is fine for simple editing things, but sometimes it's not sufficient. So we can have two approaches. Now we could implement the whole model that we proposed, including the container hierarchy and the slices. But we can also make a shortcut by using a new interface that is inside the sound editor, which is an open sound control interface that allows us to send commands from an open sound control client. And in fact, SuperCollider is a brilliant sound OSC client, because we have a rich language and we have a good support for open sound control. So in this case, I'm going to use the OSC to generate markers. I'm deleting these ones. I have a class in SuperCollider that's named after the sound file editor, and I have simple open sound control commands, for example, to open a file, and now it's already open, it will come to the front, or it doesn't, nothing's happening, it's already open. And I have a small algorithm that can create markers. I'm not explaining this in detail because otherwise it's getting too late. I have a simple command that says the active document, and it has a sub-element markers, and I add a marker, which is the name and the position. So now I created some 20 markers in a geometric series for whatever reason. And now inversely, I can read the markers from the file. So I can ask the document to return the current marker positions through OSD. So now I queried them, now of course I just printed them, but now I have algorithmic, I have direct control, I can store them in whatever format I want. So we might want to have more complex things than just the plain marker position. We want to have maybe metadata, we want to attach other information to the markers, and therefore there is the opportunity to register additional commands in the sound file editor. For example, now I registered a new menu point, it's called the Rhizome editor, which is just something for a particular project that I did. It's not a generic editor, it's something for a really particular project. And I'm having the opportunity to build all these custom panels using something on top of the Open Sound Control protocol called Swing OST, which is a graphical user interface server. So now I have a patch in SuperCollider that allows me to edit markers. But I should be actually following my position. I have to zoom in a little too, so one can recognize. So I have a text file here, which is a long recording of speech, and I have to segment all the words because I want to distribute the words on different speakers. And now I have a small algorithm that can synchronize the sound editor with my custom editor. And I can store the files along with, for example, fading and fade out times. I can play back the sound file, the sounds. I have one sentence. And so it's just a one sentence now. It's pretty low volume now. I can play this in. The noise is due to the missing the eyeballs, but it's like I can play the slices themselves. So it's much easier than doing all the stuff by hand. I can code it once if I have a bigger project. And in fact, I'm storing these. This was before the model was proposed, so I already have a custom format in this case, which is XML based. It looks a little different. I have a text, since I have a text body, I have different lines and I have different recorded versions of the same sentence. But I already have them segmented into words, which are defined by a beginning position. For simplicity, I'm always using sample frames because I don't need to edit them by hand. So I have the position, I have the length. So the ending is the position plus the length. I only need a way now to convert into the new format. Of course, since we have this XML library in SuperCollider, we can do it. It's also maybe too complicated now to go into details. But you see there's classes for SuperCollider, like the document object model document, which is. There's two approaches to XML, one is DOM and one is SX. But we use the document object model, and I can create now a new document from the data structure that I already have. So I'm creating a file that confirms to our model. I already did that. And now I just convert the first sentence and it would look something like that. I mean, it's a very stripped down version. We're not using hierarchies in this case. We're not using relative markers, but just for you to see that it's very easy to apply it to a different model. And we have an example implementation in SuperCollider that uses a library called bbcut, written by Nick Collins. And this way we can easily read in the XML file using the load command. This takes a few seconds because the bbcut loads the whole sound file into the memory. It takes like a few seconds. And then we can access that slice instrument by, for example, getting, if there's a cue list associated with it, we can read the cue list. I see all the cues here is just a printout, it's like the result of the expression. And I can play them back.
Wir haben alles verwendet, was uns begegnet ist.
And I was playing back all the slices one after another.
Wir haben alles verwendet, was uns begegnet ist.
And now we can do things with it. We can scramble it for it. We can rearrange the cue list, for example.
Ist uns begegnet haben, was verwendet wir alles.
So this is just a really simple example, but the point about the proposal is that you often need to slice things when you're dealing with concrete sound, and you always reinvent the wheel for every project because you need to store your markers and your regions in some way. So we're proposing one format that could be then the common language between different applications, so we can easily transfer the positions from one application to another. Okay, so that was really, really brief, so I'm sure there's some questions, and also I was very brief with the details of the XML format, so when you have questions, we're happy to answer. There should be one example in the example. I guess there's one. Maybe there is. I'm not sure. It's not here, but it's a tilde format. You can say like from like measure one beat one. Is that correct? Yeah. So this is the way. Is it? I'm not so familiar with the beats. So this way you would write it, like you make a slice named like a beat, and then you can go from to something like that.
Oh. Yeah, I think it starts at one, not at zero. But it can be made choosable, of course, configurable, whether it starts at zero or at one.
We don't have a special tempo element or tempo attribute at the moment, but that could be easily added on.
It would be done by just adding a tempo attribute to the most outer wave tag, wave element, and then you have a tempo applied to the whole thing.
You can also imagine poly tempo. I mean, you can all, since it's a hierarchy, you can override tempi in sub regions, so you can have polyrhythm things for sure. Any other questions?
I'm a little bit worried that providing so much options will slow down the adaptation. Options in terms of time, in terms of expressing time, because we always have to start recalculating, and especially bars and beats, it's a nice idea, but it's very difficult, I think, for, do you have a unit or
last little stuff. Well, you can have a child slice that simply describes the whole region where a certain tempo applies, and then inside this slice you have a couple of child slices that are all referring to this tempo and to this particular beginning of the measure. I mean, it should be possible. I mean, it's true that of course the parser, to be properly handling all different expressions of time values, that it needs to do some work, but maybe there's applications where we don't need to implement all types of things, but whether you have seconds or frames, it's just one multiplication. It's not a big deal to deal with that. From the overhead point of view, the whole XML parsing and processing is in magnitudes higher than transforming one time value into another one. I mean, you can also imagine when you have video-based media, you can be dealing with frames and frames per second and other. This is the proposal and can be applied to other media as well, where you might have other units than seconds or whatever. Okay.
If there are no further questions, I'd suggest we go on with the next talk by Jens Gulden. And he will talk about how you can talk to Jack using Java. So, a couple of minutes.
Thank you. Haben wir da noch Ton? Der Seite. Ja. Ja? Dann machen wir das anders, dann nervt es auch nicht so. Ich sage jetzt einfach unter die Decke.
Hello, my name is Jens Gulden. I'm here from TU Berlin, and today I want to show you something which I've started writing, I think, 2 years ago from private interest. I came across the Jack Audio Connection Kit, and I found it quite a good way of interconnecting different audio applications on Linux. And I had the impression that I'd like to write my own Jack clients, but by that time the only programming language I knew, and that's still the case in fact, is Java, the only programming language that I knew well at least. So I thought there should be a way to use the Java programming language for creating Jack audio clients, and this is what this presentation is about, because I've built a solution that makes that possible. Yeah, what's JJAC for? It seems to skip on its own. Oh.
Press the pause button. Go on, go with the mouse and press on the pausing
symbol. Okay, so. I'm sorry. I'm not a Mac user, I'm usually using Linux. Yeah, JJAC is what I just said, is for creating Jack clients with the Java programming language. And when you do so, you're then able to record audio using Java. You're able to generate new audio, like if you develop a synthesizer application, or you're able to transform audio that comes in, and you can create effects on it and send it out again as audio. With Java and all Jack compliant, that means inside, regularly inside the Jack system. And as such, JJAC becomes a possible alternative to using the internal Java Sound API, because it's a different approach for handling audio with Java. The presentation will first quickly introduce how Jack works, then I'll give an idea how to integrate Jack with Java in principle. Then I'll show how JJAC does this in the more simple case, in a direct reflection where you simply map that one process function that Jack calls back during its processing onto one Java process method inside the Java virtual machine. And as an addition to that, there's the JJAC high-level API, which inside the Java virtual machine and purely written in Java, adds some additional features for internally connecting JJAC clients inside the Java virtual machine. But this is independent from the actual Jack bridging. And in the end, I'll give some examples. Okay, this is the general scheme of general setup with the Jack server working. You can think of the Jack server as running a processing loop that comes from the audio input, then passes through possibly multiple audio processing clients, and then reroutes the audio to the hardware output. Some clients, like here the compressor and reverb clients, they would take input audio and generate output audio, but there can also be clients like the synth client here in an example that just generates audio and doesn't take any input. And if you consider such a situation as being set up in QJAC CTL, it would look like this in some way. Now this is what I think is generally referred to as the Jack processing loop. And if you now want to integrate Java into this, you have to be compliant to that idea that every audio client has its own process method, which process function, native C written process function, which gets called by the Jack server. So to integrate Java, you somehow need to provide that native process function to the Jack processing loop. But you got to plug in the Java virtual machine and communicate between that native process function, which is part of that Jack server loop, and then delegates the call for audio processing actually into the Java virtual machine, so that actually the Java language is responsible for processing the data. Yeah, this is what I just said in written words. There is a native library which provides this process function natively written in C. That's the libjjk library. That library is bound to one Java class called JJAC system by means of the Java native interface, which exists since the very first version of Java, so it's probably known to someone. And the native call inside the Java, the Jack processing loop is delegated inside the Java virtual machine and then run by a Java class. These are just some examples of how Java written JJAC clients can look like if they have GUI. Okay, as I said in the introduction, there are two levels of architecture. First, there is a direct Jack reflection, where this idea that there is one single native process function which processes pieces of the audio data regularly is just reflected into the Java world. And so we have one single Java process method of a Java class which does this audio processing, and the high-level API will give some add-on to this. But usually the direct JAK reflection is what most applications, at least medium-sized applications, would use and would be sufficient for them. And this is how a process method in Java could be implemented. This is a real code which would also run. So both the input and audio, the input and output audio data that is passed to the native process function, which are areas of memory of float values to be processed. They are encapsulated here in the JJK audio event. From that event, you can query, as you can see, the get input and get output as float buffers, which are in fact arrays of float in Java, and then you can loop over them and process them. And to run it, you just set this client to the JJK system. You make this client the one single client which gets processed inside the JJK processing loop within the last line there, set client. Okay, the high-level API is just an add-on which in principle is independent from JAK, so I'll keep this short here. It's just an idea of additionally modeling inside the Java world in an object-oriented way, things like channels, like ports, to which channels get connected in order to interconnect multiple clients. The idea of an audio producer, audio consumer pattern, so clients can take both these roles explicitly. This is something which then once the bridging between native JAK and Java written JJK is done, is then completely modeled inside Java with normal object-oriented Java. It's also compatible to the Java Beans mechanism. So this is one example where you can see combined JJK client, that means the application in the right up there, actually consists of multiple individual JJK clients that are combined to one big client, and they appear as one native JAK client to the JAK system, as you can see here in the QJAK-CDL window. But internally to the Java virtual machine, it's a combination of multiple individual clients. Yeah, and this is an example of how the bean compatible connection mechanism can be used. The bean builder application is something that is available from Sun for free, and it's a small development environment for creating Java beans, and this can be simply extended to interconnect JJK clients this way. Yeah, in the end I want to give some real world, you shouldn't have added a ha 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 here like you did, some real world examples, and there's the music sequencer Phrynica, which is licensed under the GPL and available at phrynica.com, and it's an entirely Java written music sequencer which implements the abstract model that is suggested by the JavaX Sound MIDI package. And it can either use JJK on systems on which JAK is available, or use the internal Java Sound API for its audio I/O. So you can choose with that application. And this is how it looks like. That's a preview of the upcoming Phrynica 0.4 version, which already looks very different than the current 0.3 version. Made a lot of progress recently, so I think it's going to be a nice application soon. Yeah, let me say one word of how this internally is implemented. Luckily, there are some additions since JDK 1.4, by means of this NewRO API that has been added to Java. And this introduces this concept of direct byte buffers, which then can also be direct int buffers, direct float buffers. But generally, the idea of direct byte buffers is to map an existing memory block of physical memory into the Java world and make it accessible as a Java object. So you know that Java usually is an abstraction from those hardware close ideas like physical memory. Java usually doesn't know physical memory. But by introducing this new IO library, they opened a backdoor kind of to actually map existing blocks of memory into the Java world. And that means that the blocks of memory that the JAX server provides to us as input and output float arrays for processing first doesn't need to be converted in some way, because Java's float format is the same as the native float format, and it doesn't even need to be copied. Those memory arrays don't even need to be copied, because in the implementation the existing memory block as passed from the JAX server is just mapped to the direct byte buffer and then to the direct float buffer with which makes the float varias available to Java. So this is quite efficient. And this is the reason, of course, why for running JJK you need JDK 1.4 or above. Yeah, this is even more detailed, the way how processing works. If you are known, if you're familiar with the JNI, the Java Native Interface, programming, you might recognize these things. The process function, the native process function here, gets called by the JAX processing thread inside the JAX processing loop by the JAX server. And then the current thread, which is this JAX processing thread, has to be attached to the Java virtual machine in order to make the Java virtual machine features accessible to this thread and make the upcoming functions callable. Then this, as I said, the byte buffer object is natively instantiated, which is a Java object later available inside the Java virtual machine, but with calling the function new direct byte buffer, it gets natively instantiated at that point and encapsulates those areas of memory as float buffers. And then with call static void method, the whole thing branches into the Java virtual machine, and then everything goes on in Java. I've just collected a few points for comparing JJK with the with internally shipped Java Sound API. I think this list is not complete, but you can think of some aspects like interoperability, for example. There you can clearly state that JJK offers far more interoperability because it is based on JAX, and JAX has this inherent idea of audio clients that are connected to each other with virtual cables. So this is something that is not easily achievable with the Java Sound API. I've done some measuring on timing latency. This is included in the sheets if you download them as an appendix in the end. I'm not going to present this. I had different results depending on different operating systems and different audio hardware used and different Java versions. So it's very diverse. You cannot say that either JJK with the underlying JAX system has a low latency, or using the Java Sound API directly. It really depends on OS hardware and even on the Java version. Real-time capabilities should be usable with JJK. This is not fully tested, but it should be possible that the processing thread that runs through the Java virtual machine can be in real-time mode. What's not resolved yet is the question whether with the garbage collection of the Java Virtual Machine might disturb this. I have to do some, have to look into this a bit more. Might be, might not be, I don't know yet. For running Java Sound in real-time mode, you can expect that you have to run the whole Java Virtual Machine in a real-time thread. Otherwise, you won't be able to do that. Yeah, the architecture of JJAC and Java Sound inherently differ because JJAC implements a pull architecture. The JAC thread calls the process function and then requests the application to process the audio data, while the Java Sound API requests or expects the application to push audio data on time, in time before it's too late to output it to the audio output channel. So it's a completely different approach here, and I think for issues of latency and real time issues, I think the pull architecture is more appropriate for audio processing. The data format is different as used between JJAC and the Java Sound API, because Java Sound API simply uses a 16-bit integer audio data, and JJAC, as JAC does, uses float values, which becomes first might provide a better audio quality because you don't have any aliasing effects between multiple conversions between float and int again, and as you can think of having multiple clients connected to each other, you even save time of subsequent conversion between different formats if you stick to float in the whole processing loop. So at least when you start connecting multiple clients with each other, then the float approach might even be more efficient in terms of time consuming. The number of channels that are available to a JJAC client is exactly the number of channels that is configured in the JAC system. And the JAC system is very flexible in doing these things. You can, I think, even combine multiple audio output hardwares to virtually multi-channel buses. So this is not restricted by JJAC in any way. It's just you just use the JAC configuration, and the Java Sound API models this in a more hardware close way. Yeah, the underlying operating system for JJAC, of course, requires an operating system which supports JAC. So that's currently, I think, Linux or Mac. I've recently read on some mailing list that someone compiled JAC for Windows 2. I don't know if it's available now for Windows.
JAC DMP.
Sorry?
JAC DMP is good.
Yeah, it
should work.
Oh, yeah, fine. So, would then be an issue one day to test JJAC on Windows running on that. But I haven't done that yet. Yeah, there are some future plans. Currently, the people who develop the Phrenica application, as I've seen in their CVS repository, they are doing some additions to JJAC, and some of these additions have already become part of the JJAC CVS repository currently. As I've also already said, I want to examine those garbage collection issues more closely. I haven't done that yet. I don't know if when the Java Virtual Machine decides to perform garbage collection, if really all threads that run through it are stopped. Someone said that. I found it in the net somewhere that garbage collection always implies that all threads running through the Java Virtual Machine, that means that being attached to the JVM at that time, will be stopped, and that would be a problem if the JAC processing thread is attached at that time to the Java Virtual Machine. But it's just, I don't know if this is a problem. It has to be examined. There are some developments going on with JAC MIDI, which I also haven't looked closely at, but it sounds interesting if JAC one day will be capable of MIDI too, and that would be then maybe another aspect to add to JJAC 2. To give a short conclusion, I think JJET enables, as no other approach that I know by now, interconnectability of audio clients written in Java. This is not possible in that flexible way with, for example, the Java Sound API, but it's inherent to JAX, so it's something that naturally comes with JJET 2. I think the architecture of JAX and thus JJET is more specific to audio processing, like, for example, the pull approach and using float values throughout the whole processing loop. I think this is more elegant than a push approach or using integer values, so the architecture can be expected to be more suitable for more complex audio processing too. As I've said, there may be some performance gains by using JAX as compared to other sound APIs, depending on the system. And in general, you can say that JJET is some serious alternative to the Java Sound API to be considered. There may be situations in which JJET should be used instead, and there may be others. Yes, thank you for listening. Do you have any questions? Yes, please.
We don't understand. Okay. Could you go back to that slide where you have explaining the Java native interface?
This one?
Yeah. The code in the blue bit, that's the C code, is it? That's the bit in C that makes a connection between the Jack and the Java.
Exactly, yes. The blue part is written in C, mm-hmm. and it invokes some functions like attach current thread, new direct byte buffer, call static void method. These are functions that come with the Java native interface. So these are the actual bridging functions to the Java virtual machine.
So that's where you wrap the Jack code to connect to the Java.
Right, as indicated by that blue arrow, which then from call static void method branches into the red Java world.
I can see now. So you actually wrote some C code there. You said you're not
the joke in the end. I said I wanted to have the bridge between JAX and Java because I didn't know any other language, and I learned C by that because I had to use some C for the bridging code. Yes. Yes, Pete.
The simple example you showed gave me the impression that you assume that the number of inputs and outputs is the same always.
Might be in this example.
Count channels.
Yeah.
Is input and output, apparently.
I think count channels is implemented in a way that it would return the minimum. I think you could you can individually query how many channels the input has. I think there is a function like count input channels, count output channels too. And I think count channels is implemented to return the minimum of both.
Okay. It's not fixed. You can have a different number of inputs and outputs.
Yes, JREC does not require to be the numbers to be identical.
One more question?
There was another question.
There's another question to the other side.
The more detailed one. Yeah.
The attach process, attach current thread, does it have to be called in each process, or is it just for an example?
This is actually wrapped inside an if statement which tests if attached current thread has been called before, but I cut this out to get it more brief here.
It has to be called only once.
Yes. It works. I don't know what the specification that says, but we have tested this, and so far it works by only calling it once and then just testing whether the thread is already attached later on.
Do you know how much overhead it is to call from?
No, but anyway, there wouldn't be a change if there is a lot of overhead induced by the Java native interface. There wouldn't be a big chance to get rid of that. So you just have to trust the some guys or the implementers of the JVM that they do this as quickly as possible.
Two more. One is detail. I seem to remember that just Jack process call is an int function, not a void. So a static void. But I think there is actually a return value from Jack process.
In the native part, I think in this example, in the C, the blue written part has the integer return value,
which is equal to what? Because the other function. Jack,
you mean it's actually void? It's a mistake here, maybe.
Jack function? I think it's an int function. It should return a value.
So you think there is a return statement missing in the end?
Yes. Maybe you should not use call static void, call static int, something like that.
Yep. You mean that the Java part should be able to return that value too? Yes.
Could be mistaken, but I think it's an int function.
As the example shows, the native part is an int function and the Java part is a void function, yes. Maybe this is because I haven't understood what the return function for the JEC native process function is for.
It should normally be zero.
If it's something important, it's not too hard to edit in an upcoming version. We can have a look at the source code right after this.
No? That was just a detail. I have another question. Does Java provide a real-time safe methods to exchange data between the chapter and the other parts of the application?
It does run with threads that are in real-time mode. We have tested this.
Guaranteed that you will not block the real-time thread.
I've noticed this twice, the idea of the garbage collection which might stop the thread. I don't know yet.
Communication might also stop. That's my question.
Yeah.
Is there a safe way to send data from to the Jack thread to the rest of the application? A safe way which will never block the Jack thread.
The data itself is not sent in a way?
No, but in a real application you need some data exchange between the application, the GUI, and the Jack thread. You need to pass some values to configure what should happen.
You mean something like, which in this short example was also indicated by a parameter from GUI, that would be such a call which you would expect.
But we also, for example, want to send a signal to the GUI that's so many samples have passed, for example. And it should be real-time safe to do that.
It should be, I don't know.
So the question is that possible or not?
Yeah, it's still subject to be tested. Anything else? So thank you again for your attention.
Thank you. the Java collection might be a Android question is when you kick in.
Die ganzen Modelle
noch die Hut sein?
Ja.
Ich bin leider nicht so komplett aufzufahren. Ich kann auch sein, dass ich Pass habe. Ich muss inzwischen auch auf das Team kommen. Jetzt sag mir nochmal, wie das funktioniert mit dem Kugelzahn. Wie kann ich einen bestimmten Code machen und darauf verhindern, dass der Garbage Collector irgendwie funktioniert?
Ja, wie gesagt, das weiß ich nicht. Ich habe nur gesagt, dass das genau der Punkt ist, der noch
gesagt wird. Das hast du vorhin auch gefragt, ne?
Nee, das hatte ich auch schon im Vortrag gesagt,
ja.
Weil auch auf den Mailinglisten also einige Leute das schon geäußert hatten, dass das ein Problem sein könnte.
Ah, hallo. Musst du mal die Installation anschalten, kannst du auch gleich wenden, weil es niemand mit dir braucht.
So.
Hoffmanns, er kommt gleich vorbei.
Ja, gut. Willst du noch was machen, Alex?
Nee,
ich wollte ihn gerade ausschalten, um dir dann zu bringen. Halt.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Ja, das war
ich. Okay. Ich hätte so blöd, ich hätte das gerne.
Gibt es denn etwas, was man, also ich habe mit Java und dem Mietmann gearbeitet. Ich meine, ich jetzt, was wirklich die Mietmann macht, ist realisieren wollte. Aber es gibt keine Möglichkeit, zum Beispiel zu sagen, ich habe einen Thread und in diesem Thread gibt es keine Garbage-Collection.
Genau, ja, das ist genau eine Möglichkeit, könnte man sich überlegen.
Also ich meine, ein Kollege meinte gerade, es gäbe eine spezielle Java-Implementierung für Mietmann,
also Java RT oder so.
Ja, das ist eine eigene. Ja, aber ich wundere mich, wie das überhaupt irgendwie funktioniert. Das, ich meine, du wirst ja ewig mit diesem Programm jetzt gearbeitet haben mit der API. Und ich habe halt Sachen erlebt in Java, so also von diesen Textgeschichten, wo du halt so siehst, ne, alles zack, 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 Pause, Garbage Collection, zack, 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 zack. Und so weißt du, also wo einfach klar ist, es müsste einem sofort in die Ohren fliegen. Und jetzt frage ich mich, ob das
Programm. Garbage Collection merkst du normalerweise nicht. Du merkst, wenn du neue Klassen aufrufst und die werden erstmal gecached. Das ist normalerweise der einzige
Punkt, wo du
abbremst, wenn du eine Klasse zum ersten Mal instanzierst.
Also ich habe es gemerkt mal bei einer naiven Implementierung von so einer Schneeflockenkurve zum Beispiel. Wenn du sowas anzeigen lässt und wo du dann auch wirklich ständig Objekte erzeugst und wieder wegschmeißt.
Würde,
wo es wirklich auf
Real-Time-Arbeit
ankommt. Und zwar muss ich mir das
externe Steuerung anfahren, die überall in Millisekunden genau. Ich weiß halt vorher, wenn ich eine Nachstruktur in dem Raum habe, ich kann die einfach frei erzeugen, ich werde aber nicht werden, das geht nicht. Ich bin nicht frei, aber ich werde kein Objekt erzeugen, keine neuen Klassen aufnehmen. Das ist super einfach. Ring war von da, das Spiel und so weiter. Aber ich kann mir ja halt nicht sicher sein. Und cool finde ich eben halt, wenn man in der Java Virtual Machine sagen könnte, pass auf, ab jetzt, halt mal die Datenschulektor an, natürlich jetzt einfach mal, erzeugen keine neuen Objekte, dann geben keine Objekte frei. Und wenn wir da durch sind, dann sagt man halt, weil es gibt ja diesen Aufruf.
Das ist ein GC, gibt es.
Ja,
aber ich gebe aber kein Disable GC.
Ja, das heißt, ich kann den aufrufen vorher und hoffe, dass ich dann.
Runtime GC oder so.
Ja, ja, irgendwie gibt es dann sowas. Und ich habe mal gedacht, das müsste doch eigentlich Standard sein, weil ich meine, was jetzt. Der Anzeuger sagt, das ist wirklich jetzt nicht so, also dass die Wahrscheinlichkeit dann hinreichend groß ist. Vor allem, weil ich halt, nehmen wir mal, du bist jetzt in so einem kleinen abgegrenzten Kontext, dann kannst du das sagen, aber nehmen wir mal, du schreibst ein Server, wo du gar nicht weißt, was in der virtuellen Maschine noch alles abgeht und wie da die einzelnen Threads getimt werden, ob du wirklich deinen schärfen Prozessor jederzeit kriegst. Und da reicht es mir halt nicht, dass man dann sagt, okay, in so einem, ich meine, es ist ja immer noch ein Labor. Bedingungen mehr oder weniger. Man kann das System so bauen, dass es übersichtlich bleibt. Aber es gibt halt keine Garantie. Und ich überlege, wie man es realisieren kann, dass man eine Garantie hat. Also wie in C zum Beispiel, dass ich sage, okay, lieber Kernel, der Thread ist mit Realtime. Und sobald er irgendwas zu tun hat, dann machen alle anderen erstmal Pause. Das ist das eine. Und das zweite ist eben, dass man, was man ja angesprochen nicht hat, dass man den Garbage Collector bändigen kann. Oder dass der Garbage Collector läuft, aber mit genau definierter Maximalität. Das weiß ich zum Beispiel. Ich habe gehört, dass das geht. Also du kannst dem Garbage Collector wohl irgendwie sagen, dass auch, du läufst maximal so und so lange und bis dahin nicht freigeben konntest, das bleibt dann erstmal. Mhm. Oder es gibt auch realtime-fähige Garbage Collectors, aber ich weiß nicht, in Java. Ich habe mir das irgendwann mal kennst du den Peter Hanappe, der diesen Fluid-Sense geschrieben hat. So ein Belgier, ganz verrückter Typ. Der hat mir mal einen Garbage Collector implementiert, der realtime-safe ist. Mhm. Aber nicht, also den Java implementiert ihn nicht, glaube ich, es gibt in der Version von mir ist ein komischer Smallbox, das ist gut, dieses kam. Aber jetzt ist halt nicht. Aber hier sind noch nie Probleme, dass hier nicht der, zum Beispiel der Jack, den du rausschmeißt, weil du keine Deadlines eingehalten hast oder so.
Also ich hatte das schon oft, dass der Jack, den mich rausgeschmissen hat, aber ich glaube nicht, dass es daran lag. Also,
sondern?
Ich weiß es nicht.
Okay, ja.
Es ist ziemlich oft passiert, gerade bei den Latenzmessungen, die ich gemacht habe, dass das Ding gar nicht richtig gestartet ist. Da muss ich
wenn du mit super kleinen Buffern arbeitest, wenn du Jack auf 64 oder was Frame
dann schickst. Ja, und ist ja dann gar nicht richtig hochgekommen. Also der hat versucht, den Client anzumelden und irgendwie gleich am Anfang hat er.
Ach so, schon gleich am Anfang, wenn die ganze Scheiße erstmal reingeladen werden muss. Nein, ja. Gleich wieder mit dem Zombie fallen.
Also es ist noch nicht 100% stabil alles, aber im Prinzip geht es.
Und die weil ich fände es super, ich würde es super gerne machen. Also JNet benutzt nicht. Wie gesagt, das ist die Frage, was man da machen muss.
Ja, dann leite ich gerne als Nutzer ein. Es gibt auch eine Mailingliste
zwischen
JNet Users und mit sehr engagierten, also nur eine Handvoll Leute, aber die sind sehr engagiert, wenn man die was fragt und mailen die alle für einen Tag zu.
Ja, ich habe halt bisher, das Einzige, was ich bisher in Java wirklich größer gemacht habe, das ist halt das Newsletter-Kontext irgendwie, der JUI. Und das ist irgendwie was völlig anderes, deswegen wusste ich jetzt nicht.
Ja, aber an sich so ein Client zu schreiben, wenn der SRC, wenn der keine GUI hat, dann ist das wirklich einfach. Dann kannst du den Beispielcode nehmen und dann stelle einfach unter. Der eigentliche Algorithmus ist ja sowieso sprachunabhängig.
Ja, ja, das ist gut.
Berechnung von irgendwas
schreiben. Ja, vielen Dank.
Was will die Kassen von mir?
Also ich habe vor kurzem mal mitgebaut, also habe ein paar Funktionen dafür geschrieben, MIDI-Routen quantisieren, also Ghost Part, also dass man MIDI-Part beliebig wiederholen kann.
Ja, hallo. Ah, hi, ich bin leider nicht mal wegdrücken muss, aber es war mit dem Vortrag, ich kann nicht so schnell rausgehen. Das geht's. Hast du mal das Team ansehen können? Auch. Gut. Ja, fantastisch. Ist es dir gelungen, irgendwie die Netzwerkkabel da vernünftig schon mal runterzubringen? Ach, schade. Aus verschiedenen Gründen. Erstens mal, weil ich dann auch coole Atmung und Soundfield gehabt hätte, wenn ich dann nicht gestanden hätte, muss ich einfach was filmen gewesen. Ach so. Also sprich, es wird auf die Wand projiziert, wo es auch vorgesehen ist. Mhm. Ah ja, sehr gut. Super. Das ist noch nicht klar, das ist relativ klar. Du schätzt 20. Das passt schon. Und wir können doch die Spiele in der Mitte anpassen. Mhm, war schön, weil das ist ja eigentlich optimal. Super. Ja, ich habe mich bemüht, übrigens noch nie zu kommen, das ist halt, ich weiß nicht, wie es Verkehr ist. Ich kann mal mit Andreas nochmal sprechen. Aber dann soll das ziemlich geil werden. Stunde. Also, es ist so, wenn wir hier, ich mal auf die Hand gucken, wenn wir hier nach Plan durchkommen, dann ist hier 36 Schichten scharf. Das Blöde ist nur, dass gerade der letzte Referent über eine Schwammleitung reinkommt. Das ist Andres Cabrera aus Brasilien. Und es kann sein, dass am Anfang nicht steht, hier eine Viertelstunde, da eine Stunde, Viertelstunde, was jetzt läuft. Aber es sollte eigentlich nicht hier unten sitzen, wir sitzen nur spätestens verpissen können. Ich muss einfach mit Eric abgehen, vielleicht kann der auch hier die letzte Nummer machen und dann würde ich einfach abhauen. Ja, alles klar, danke erstmal, ne? Ciao. Gracias.